I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be with you all. James, Julia, it's such a great privilege and such a joy to be here on a morning like this. It's a day to rejoice. Now, I expect some of you here this morning will be veterans of baptism services. You've seen more baptisms than ad hoc dinners. Some of you will have seen a handful, and perhaps for some of you, this is the first baptism you've ever witnessed. And whichever is the case for you, it's good to ask, I suppose, one big question. What is a baptism? What are you actually seeing happen here this morning? Yes, it's a ceremony. Yes, it's a symbol, but it's something that takes us to the heart of some of the very biggest questions that we can ask in this life. Now, to answer that question, I want to look at three sentences Jesus Christ himself spoke. If you've got a Bible in front of you, it's in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. They will be up on the screen behind me as well. Just three sentences Jesus spoke in Matthew chapter 11, starting at verse 28. Jesus said these words. He spoke them to a crowd of people. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I want to draw your attention to three truths Jesus is teaching that crowd of people in those sentences. And then with each one, I'll show you how they relate to baptism. So here's the first truth Jesus is teaching us. He's teaching us that we have souls. Jesus says that we will find rest for our souls if we do what he instructs us here. What does he mean by that? Well, he means that we are more than our bodies. That even when the time comes for our bodies to decay and die, our souls, who we really are, will live on. He means that we are eternal creatures. In 1932, a single word started appearing in chalk on the streets of Sydney. A single word, the word eternity. And it happened for 24 years without anyone knowing who was writing this single word, eternity, on the streets, just on the pavement, all over Sydney. It took 24 years before they discovered a man named Arthur Stace who was doing it. Why was he doing it? Because he'd got hold of this one great truth: we are eternal creatures. So over the course of his life, it's estimated that for 35 years, he wrote this word about 500,000 times on the streets of Sydney. But do you think one of the reasons he was doing it is because we need that constant reminder? Actually, what we do on a day-to-day basis is we get up, we go to work, we have our breakfast, we go to the shops, we meet a friend, we do whatever we're planning to do, and we so rarely think to ourselves, I am an eternal being. We need that word eternity chalked on our streets, framed in our houses, etched onto our brains. We are eternal beings. Now, when we stop and think about that, we know we aren't just animals that die. You think about your children, think about your nephew or your niece. They're precious, aren't they? No one had to sit down and tell you, you know that child is precious, aren't they? You just know they are. You know they're special. We know it instinctively. And last week, there was a murder on our street, on the street we live on. It's not the sort of place where that happens very often. So there's shock and there's sadness there in the community. Do you know what? I never heard anyone say anything like, well, what's the big deal? We've got another 7.7 billion people here in the planet. What's the big problem? It's only one person. Actually, no, there was sadness and grief, even from people who had never met the woman who died, because we instinctively know human life is precious in a way that squirrels aren't precious when you see them as roadkill on the side of the road. in the way that there's never an outpouring of grief when someone's cabbage in the allotment is eaten by slugs. Yes, life has gone, but it's different, isn't it? We know it is. And in these words, Jesus tells us why. He explains our instincts. He explains what we know to be true inside, that we have souls. We are eternal creatures. We're made that way by our Creator. We're made by God. And that means we have a conscience. We have an innate sense of morality, not a perfect sense of morality. We have blind spots, we have errors, but we have a sense of morality. We're made with the ability to love, with a longing for justice, with a fear of death. The only way to understand who we really are is to recognize that we have souls. And that's how we've been made by our Creator, by God. How does this relate to baptism? Well, in being baptized, James and Julie are declaring that they have souls. They're declaring more than that, but the first thing they're declaring is, I am an eternal creature made by God. I believe my soul will live on after my body is placed into a grave. That's the first thing Jesus is teaching. He's teaching us that we have souls. Secondly, he's teaching in these words that we have restless souls. Notice what he says. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. He's saying that there's something people need to do in order to find rest for their souls. It doesn't just happen automatically. So what he's saying is the default position of our souls is that they don't have rest. They are restless. Talks about people who labor and are heavy laden, people who feel weighed down, whether it's by heavy workloads, labor, or heavy weight that press them down. It says these burdens are things that make our souls restless and agitated and distressed, so that we're not at ease, we're not relaxed. I said earlier, Jesus, as he's speaking these words, he speaks them to a whole crowd of people. So there would have inevitably been all sorts of people there, young and old, rich and poor, people in good health, people with serious illnesses, people who've just started a new job and are excited about it, people who feel like they're stuck in dead-end jobs. And he's saying the default position when it comes to our souls is that they don't have rest. There are these burdens we carry. And there would have been lots of different burdens in the crowd of people that day. And I've no doubt the same will be true for us here in a crowd of people gathered this morning as well. So I mentioned briefly three types of burdens that people carry. Firstly, we have burdens that other people place on us. On Jesus' day, that crowd, it was the Pharisees. The Pharisees demanded obedience to all the laws they created, and it was simply unbearable. He said, for example, you had to tithe all your herbs and spices. So imagine next time you're going to cook a curry and not open a jar. That's not what I mean. I mean actually cook a curry, and you've got all your spices laid out there. But before you can start, you have to weigh out exactly a tenth of each one and go and give it away first. They said you had to wear boxes on your arms and on your forehead carrying Bible verses. Now imagine that sort of rule in every area of your life. It was just unbearable, the pressure they felt. We have burdens other people place on us. It can be the expectation of parents to succeed. We feel the pressure. What will my parents think if I fail? The expectation of bosses. I just feel the pressure to sell my soul to my employer. They demand everything from me. The expectation we feel our friends put on us. To always be happy. To always have something funny to say. The pressure on social media to present us to ourselves as being people who've got it all together. When actually on the inside I just feel like I'm crumbling. Sometimes we have burdens other people place on us. Sometimes we don't need other people to do that because we put all those burdens on ourselves. We set ourselves goals and then we try to reach them and we persuade ourselves, happiness is within my grasp. I can relieve myself of my burdens. But then either we fail and then we beat ourselves up, or we succeed and then before long we realize we still feel these same burdens and the whole cycle just starts all over again. Jesus says here, of course those things won't give your soul rest. Of course a relationship or a career or anything, those things can't give our souls rest. Now we sometimes find that surprising when we hear that, but Jesus doesn't. Jesus doesn't find it surprising when the things we pursue for happiness don't give our souls rest, because Jesus understands us in a way that sometimes we don't even understand ourselves. So we have burdens other people place on us. Second, we have burdens we didn't choose ourselves. I don't know many of you here today, but I know there will be all sorts of burdens being carried. It will be the weight of loneliness and heartbreak, the grief. There is someone gone and you miss them desperately and your heart aches. The pain of a difficult relationship that's just not what you wanted it to be. The struggles of illness. The pain of injustice being done to you and it just hurts. The fear of death. It's a great fear when we actually think about it. There are lots of burdens we carry that we didn't choose for ourselves, and yet they weigh us down, they stop us from concentrating, they make us weary in life. Again, the Bible explains this. This is no surprise to Jesus. This is a world that's suffering from the consequences of Adam and Eve's rebellion against God. This is a broken world. You probably don't need me to tell you that. You probably know that all you have to do is live for 24 hours in this world and you know it's broken. Things aren't as they should be, but the Bible explains it. Jesus knows that because he understands this world and he understands us like no one else does. And thirdly, we have burdens we've built up ourselves. In some ways, this can be the hardest part to hear, because actually, Jesus says, we're not part of the solution, we're part of the problem. If the problem was just other people, the solution would be dead easy. It would be isolation. Cut myself off from all the other people, from all the society and everything else that's going on. If I isolate myself, I'll be fine. But that doesn't work either. See, Jesus says in lots of places in the Bible, the problem is my behavior, my selfishness, my rebellion against the God who made me. And that creates an unbearable burden on our souls too. It's the burden of our own personal guilt for our own personal wrongdoing. Guilt can be paralyzing, can't it? It can be crushing to us. One of the worst things about guilt is I've got no one else to blame except me. When I know I've done something wrong, I can't point the finger, which is what we naturally want to do. Actually, we have to say, it's me. I'm guilty. And it hurts when we have to say that. And that's how Jesus sees us. But he doesn't say that when he says it in the Bible, just to heap on the guilt and make you feel even worse. He says it because he wants to take those burdens off our shoulders. So we have restless souls. That's the second main point. Our souls are restless. How does that relate to baptism? Well, as Julie and James are being baptized, they're acknowledging that they have been carrying burdens that are unbearable. They're acknowledging their personal guilt for their Creator, before God. That's why water is used in baptism. Because baptism is saying, I've got personal guilt that needs to be washed away. Well, here's the third thing Jesus is teaching in these verses. we have souls that can find rest in Jesus. Here's what he says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Now, when Jesus speaks these words, this is different to the solution every other religion has to offer. Because every other religion will tell you that more work is the solution. Whether it's Islam saying, pray to Mecca 5 times a day. Whether it's Jehovah's Witnesses saying, you need to knock on more doors. You need to stand out on Queen Street. Put the hours in, the rewards will come your way. Do enough. Work harder. Strive to improve yourself. Carry out the right rituals. When Jesus speaks here, again, he knows us. And he knows these things don't work. They don't remove our burdens. Actually, what they do is they add to them. Jesus doesn't give us a list of jobs as a solution here. The uniqueness of Jesus Christ is that he says, bring your burdens to me and I will take them from you. I'll take the strain, not you. That's why Jesus came into this world, God himself becoming a man. And he goes to the cross and he takes the burden of our guilt, my guilt, the guilt of everyone who will trust him. Jesus takes on the cross the place of a guilty man. That's what the cross represents. He's saying there, give me the punishment for human guilt. So the burden, the weight of our wrongdoing is taken off our shoulders and placed on his. Instead, he gives us innocent life, his perfect guiltless life instead. C.S. Lewis was the writer of the Narnia Chronicles. He's a professor, an academic, and there's this great story about how there was a room full of academics, really clever people, discussing different religions, and they were trying to work out what is it that's unique about Christianity. So people would say, well, how about, is it resurrection? The fact that, you know, is this the only one where someone rises from the dead? Well, no, there are other religions where that happens, and they go through all these different things. And it's only at that point that C.S. Lewis walks into the room, and they turn to him and say, what is it that's unique about the Christian faith? He says, oh, that's easy. It's grace. What is grace? Grace is God giving us freely, undeservedly, the gift of eternal life. Sounds so simple, doesn't it? Surely we have to do something. Well, listen to what Jesus says we have to do in those verses. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. A yoke was what a farmer would put on two oxen so that they could carry heavy load, and so the burden was spread between the two of them. Jesus says his yoke is easy and his burden is light, because Jesus is taking the strain instead of us. So what do we do? What is Jesus' yoke? Well, he calls us to entrust ourselves to him, to place ourselves into his care. We trust that he'll do for us what he said he'll do. He'll take our burdens. He'll give our souls rest. And you know, when we do that, we find relief from every other type of burden there is. Whether it's our heartache where we long for healing, whether it's that ache of loneliness, or the stress and worry of exams, or just a very uncertain, unknown future. When we ask the Lord Jesus to deal with our guilt, he gives us peace and reassurance and rest for our souls, because we're trusting in the God who made us, the God who knows us through and through, the God who holds our hand and will never let us go. And so those burdens become bearable, because we know who's in charge of them. We know who holds this whole world in our hands. Jesus makes that great invitation. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. What's that got to do with baptism? Well, as James and Julia baptized this morning, they are publicly declaring, I am placing myself into his care. I'm trusting he has the power to remove my guilt, to take away my burdens. And they don't just go down into the water. That's why they come up again. It's a symbol. They're clean. Burdens removed. Huge bags lifted off their shoulders. That's what they're saying has happened to them. Well, just for the last couple of minutes, James, Julie, I just want to speak to you for a moment, but everyone else can listen in. You don't need to turn around for a minute. You can listen too. Julie and James, you said that the baptism is a way of showing you're putting yourselves into the care of Jesus Christ. And what you have here in these words is a pattern to follow for the whole of your life. This isn't the end of the journey in that sense. This is you're at the very beginning. Because actually what you're going to keep on finding as you go through life is you're going to keep on discovering new burdens of guilt, new times when you discover things. I've done this wrong. I've broken God's rules again. I've turned away from him. Keep on discovering new burdens where you beat yourself up for not being a better Christian. Burdens you place on yourself. You'll go through life and all sorts of things will come your way. We don't know what tomorrow will bring for you, whether it's illness or redundancy or financial struggles or just difficulties in relationship. Who knows? There is sadness and there are stresses that ahead because that is life. And the temptation in those moments is going to be, at least sometimes, to look elsewhere. To look to your own resilience and determination and intelligence and hard work to sort this thing out. Or to immerse yourself in rituals and good deeds. If I put in the hours, God will sort this out. He'll see me through. I've just got to scrub myself clean. As long as I do it, do the right things, I'll sort it out myself. Jesus' words here are ones every Christian needs to keep on coming back to again and again. We need to keep on bringing our burdens to him. You are never going to reach a point where you're wise or mature or experienced enough as a Christian to think, I don't need this anymore. This is the way. The way you enter the Christian life is the way you live it. You keep on bringing your burdens to him. St. Augustine, from the early Christian fathers, the church fathers from around the 4th century AD, he said this. He said, our souls are restless until they find their rest in you. He's talking to God there. What we're witnessing this morning is two more souls that have found that rest, eternal souls, souls with needs only God, their creator, can meet, souls that have placed themselves under the care of Jesus Christ, of God himself, come to earth as a man, God himself who loved James and Julie before they were even born, thousands of years before they were ever born. God who has removed their burdens, washed them clean from guilt, and will hold their hand every day of their lives. And it's that God in Jesus Christ who issues that same invitation again today. Come to me and you will find rest for your souls. Well, thank you for listening. It's been a great joy to be with you. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Dave, for that very clear word. Well, before Julie and James are actually baptized, we're going to sing another hymn, especially chosen by Julie. And can it be that I should gain an interest in the Savior's blood? Died he for me who caused his pain, for me who him to death pursued. And Glenn, another one of our elders, will actually come and do the baptizing. So we'll stand and sing that hymn, please.